Coming up on Tech News Today, is Spotify going free for mobile? Apple's going to track it in stores, that's for sure. And 23andMe gives up a little bit. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Hi. Anybody hiring? This is Tech News Today for Friday, December 6, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zatar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that tries to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put some context around them for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Microsoft may be battling some government agencies over surveillance, but they're still working with other government agencies on other things. The US FBI and Europol teamed up with Microsoft and A10 Networks to try to take down the Zero Access botnet. They've disrupted a major portion of the click fraud system, but due to its complexity, they do not expect to fully eliminate it, really, ever. U.S. federal court, not operating in secret, allowed the operation block to block communications and take control of 49 domain names. Europol executed actually legally obtained search warrants and seizure orders on computers related to 18 IP addresses, and Microsoft filed a civil suit in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas against 8 anonymous John Does.
And the Thanks for Nothing Award goes to Golden Shores Technologies. Yay. Congratulations. The company took ID and location data from millions using its brightest flashlight Android app. Perhaps you've downloaded it. And shared the data with ad networks, but did not tell users, says the FTC. To settle the charges, Golden Shores has agreed to give users more control over what happens to their data.
There's an idea. Now, after tests in New York, Apple officially launched iBeacon in all of its stores in the U.S. The technology lets Apple know your exact location using Bluetooth. Now, before you get paranoid that a fruit company is tracking you, you have to download the app from the App Store, and then you have to give Apple permission to track you. iBeacon is already active in some Major League Baseball stadiums and Macy's as well.
Spotify has an event next week, and the Wall Street Journal and TechCrunch report the company will introduce a free mobile music service. Right now, Spotify has a free desktop service, but members have to pay for the $10 a month level to get mobile access. Similar to the desktop service, the mobile service would be ad-supported and allow a limited number of songs on demand.
A U.S. appeals court is reviewing Google's claim that Oracle does not enjoy copyright protection over certain parts of the Java programming language. Google's Android is the world's best-selling smartphone OS. The Java programming language was created by Sun Microsystems, which, of course, Oracle acquired in 2010. Oracle sued Google soon after, claiming that Google had incorporated parts of Java into Android. The ongoing issue is whether computer language that connects programs, known as application program interfaces or APIs, can be copyrighted at all.
Instagram just sent out invites to the press for an event to take place on December 12th. Now, the invite itself was sent via FedEx, not email, and contained a wooden block with a printed Instagram picture and a slot on the back so you could hang it on the wall. Why a wooden block? Because Instagram has too much money. Actually, they didn't actually say why they're doing it. But the company is reported to be building a private messaging service. Maybe we'll see that on the 12th.
Trees hate that. Comscore's market share numbers for mobile are out, and Apple seems to be leveling out at a cruising altitude of around 40.6%. Samsung inched up above a quarter of the market at 25.4%, while Motorola jumped ahead of declining HTC and LG in that order. Meanwhile, on the OS side, Android stopped declining and rose from 51.8% in July to 52.2%. Apple also nudged up from 40.4% to 40.6%. BlackBerry held on to third, though, It fell to 3.6%, just barely escaping being caught by Microsoft at 3.2%. And Symbian. Symbian still exists.
Genetic testing startup 23andMe will stop giving health analysis information to new customers in compliance with demands made by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, but won't stop sales of the kits. The FDA issued the Google-backed startup a warning 2 weeks ago saying the company needs to stop selling those at-home testing kits because they require regulatory clearance. In response, the company put its advertising campaigns for its at-home testing kits on hold.
A small amount of patent reform made it through the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday. The Innovation Act gives customers of alleged infringing devices more protection, allowing the manufacturers to protect them during a lawsuit. Yeah, right now you can be sued for owning a router that infringes a patent. If you bring an unreasonable lawsuit and lose, you'll have to pay the entity you sued. And the expensive discovery process is being moved until after a judge reviews the merits of a suit, making it less likely someone will settle just to avoid the cost of the threat. The bill does not address the rules for granting low-quality patents. It goes to the U.S. Senate next and is likely to be signed into law by the U.S. president.
The Chinese government may be tepid on Bitcoin, but analysts at Bank of America Merrill Lynch issued a report saying Bitcoin could be a major means of payment for e-commerce. Bank of America thinks if Bitcoin becomes mainstream, it could be worth $1,300 a piece. The report says that the currency can become a serious competitor to traditional money transfers as well, but also notes the volatility of price and the questionable legal standing as downsides.
And one more item, not one of the top 10 tech stories of the day, but of interest to this audience. Yesterday at inside.twit.tv, Leo Laporte wrote that Twit would not renew this host's contract. My last show will be the episode of Tech News Today on December 30th. Laporte wrote that Twit needs, quote, an in-studio anchor for Tech News Today and a news director who can help us build the kind of organization you can count on for authoritative tech news and information. Mike Elgin joins Twit as news director and will take over as lead anchor of Tech News Today on January 2nd, 2014. Which means I need to sell some stuff on Gazelle, the first sponsor of today's show, gazelle.com. I've got an iPhone. Maybe I can get $300 for it or something like that. You've probably got some gadgets too. And it's holidays. Holidays are a time when people need a little extra cash. So it's a good time to go to gazelle.com. So find out what your iPhone, your iPad, your Samsung Galaxy are worth and lock in that quote. You get it for 30 days. You've got 30 days. That at this point, I'll be out of work by the end of that time. That'll be January 6th. And you can actually have that amount of time to plan to get your new device, transfer the data off, all that sort of thing. You'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. So go find out what your iPhone or iPad are worth. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads in a lot of cases. Get a risk-free offer. Lock it in. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. And we thank Gazelle for their continuing support of Tech News Today. All right. Joining us for Friday, it is time to have Darren Kitchen back on the show from Hack 5. How's it going, Darren?
That's right. We are hacking the planet. It's good to see you, Tom.
I've been noticing that. Actually, it's been a little colder lately. Is that you?
No, that wasn't us. Those were okay, the black hats. Sorry.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about free Spotify mobile iOS. What's up with that?
Sure, let's talk about that. So the Wall Street Journal is reporting Spotify is planning a free version of its service for mobile. TechCrunch's sources say the same thing. Now, the free version would be ad-supported like the desktop version, but the ad-supported offering will allow non-paying mobile users to play a limited number of songs on demand, and it's mostly going to serve up music based on the user's input. So it's kind of like Pandora. And yes, Spotify already has a radio function, but this is going to be a little different than that. TechCrunch's sources say that users have more freedom to listen to their playlists or start collections of songs. Infinite search, if you wanted to search for pretty much any song, that would be held off for paid subscribers. Currently, like I mentioned, there's a radio function on Spotify that's free, but you can't just call up any song you want right now. The journal cited people familiar with the matter and says Spotify now has deals with all three of the major record labels to use their music on their service. Negotiations took about a year, and Spotify has an event scheduled for next week on December 11th. Darren, what do you think this? What kind of impact do you think this is going to have on the online streaming space?
I wouldn't say it was huge. I would say that it would have more of an impact if this happened back in 08 or any time closer to that when Spotify really became public. The landscape's changed a whole lot. I mean, this is cool if you're already a Spotify user. And I mean, obviously, they're going to want to, you know, garner more of those with these, and this is really the only road to. In fact, I'm actually kind of surprised I didn't start on mobile first, because that's where you think about music, or at least I do, like in the car or whatnot. So hopefully they can, like, you know, continue, and that you know, they'll be able to garner a larger subscriber base with this. But yeah, it's a little bit too late.
I think this is the bottom of the bell curve for streaming services. And I'm not disputing what you're saying, Darren, about whether it's too late or not. But this is definitely the inflection point. It either dies or it starts to become the thing that everybody who at least runs a streaming service wants it to become. Spotify's argument, there's a couple sides to this, are that once we get enough users on streaming services, everyone will make enough money off this. Spotify will make enough money. The labels will make enough money. The artists will make enough money. It's only because the users are low that these small fractions of a cent per song are a problem. Once you get 40 million users, those fractions of a cent pile up into millions of dollars for people. But they need to get those users. And so I see this as a step Spotify's taking to say, gosh, you know what? We're just not gathering the users we need. Let's make it a little easier to get them in the tent. And the thing is, they got the labels to sign off on that and say, all right, that's fine. We'll let you do this on mobile. They had to get the labels' permission to do that.
Yeah, I think anybody who uses, not anybody, but many people who use the free version of Spotify, which would not include mobile access, you know, and offline access and all sorts of good stuff that is really fun if you use an internet streaming service, could probably be like, yeah, Spotify's okay, but how often I'm really at my desktop or sitting here working at my main computer, putting my headphones, and, you know, it'd be like, am I listening to Spotify a lot at work? No, it's more when I'm on the go, when I'm in my car, or I'm on a walk, or I'm at the gym, or that sort of thing. So a few little ads here and there, people are used to it with Pandora. Pandora has a huge subscriber base. So I don't think that it's anything that's too jarring for anybody. And yeah, I think having the mobility is one of the huge selling points of a service like this.
Yeah, music, like Darren said before, like, it's something you want on the go. You want this all the time. And I know I use Spotify all the time on the desktop, but I just couldn't find myself to pay for it on the mobile space, especially since the service wasn't that different. Why can't I just have ads like every other service? I wound up listening to Pandora more on my iPad and things like that. This kind of move, I mean, it's going to put them in line with RDO and a bunch of other places. So now they're just going to be at least on even footing with people, and with their artist platform trying to convince artists to come over because they pay more than YouTube or things like that. If they can have a larger catalog, that'll help. But getting people's ears, that's super important.
Yep. Take those ears as totems. Put them up on. Let's talk about Apple's iBeacon. You may have forgotten about this. iBeacon is the service in Apple, in the iOS, sorry, that allows you to track a phone with your permission. You have to opt in to every app that's going to take advantage of this, if you trust iOS, that is. But you have to opt in, and it will track you around places like baseball stadiums. The New York Mets are going to try this out so that when you're walking through, it can guide you to your seat. You tell it what seat you are, and it'll say how close you are, or it'll give you historical facts about what happened in the ballpark. What Apple's going to do in the App Store, in the Apple app, is tell you what's going on in the store you're at. So 254 Apple stores, this has been tested in New York City, will be enabled to use iBeacon on the Apple Store app. Macy's is going to do this too, by the way. And I guess the idea is that you're walking past the iPhones, it'll tell you, like, hey, your contract is up. You can get a new iPhone now for $199. Would you like to order one? An assistant will grab one out of the back and help you out right now, give you information, help you find things in the stores. iBeam won't work without your say-so, as promised. It won't store any tracking information. Darren, do you believe them?
Sure, why not? I mean, it doesn't matter if they store it or not, because there's the fact that everybody is, you know, opting into such a service and it becomes a social norm. It means great things, because not only can I now, you know, track an iPhone user with Bluetooth in addition to Wi-Fi, it also means that, I mean, imagine the cyberpunk plot where you can actually impersonate a user and say, like, no, well, I mean, where were you the night of August 5th? You were at the Apple store. We know you were. We have a beacon.
It could be an alibi for your crimes.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, no, I did not murder all those people because I was at the Apple store. iBeacon said so.
So an alibi.
And then you have fruit tracking fruit. I'm just saying.
I'm not sure. I see this value in places like stadiums, and I see the value of places like museums, particularly giving me extra information, almost kind of a tippy toe into augmented reality. But I'm not sure what this is going to do for me in an Apple store that I keep saying App Store instead of Apple Store. They should just change the name of both of them. What is it going to do for me in an Apple Store that I couldn't just do? Like, I mean, I can look up, I can tap the icon for iPhones and it'll tell me what's in stock and allow me to get information about them. So they're not that big, I guess. Maybe
there are stores in New York that are just like they're multi-level. Yeah. And if you're looking for like the theater area, or you're looking for a Genius Bar, or you're looking for their classes that they have there, that might make more sense. But if you're looking at a tiny store like in Santa Rosa, it's about the size of like 10 by 10. It makes no sense. But if you're talking go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking, you know, where it does make all of the sense is like a Home Depot or a Lowe's, where you're like, of course, you don't want to ask anybody where the quarter inch drill bits are, but
why not?
Need to find
some hardware.
Because you're a guy and you can't ask where drill bits are.
Oh, I see. It's a directionally challenged thing. The problem with Apple stores is, in my experience, the employees are extremely helpful. And there's always one right next to you.
It might be too helpful, though. That's the thing. Like, you don't want to talk to people. That's why they have the app. You could buy something directly. No, I'm just kidding.
My experience at Apple stores is that there's never anyone around when I need them.
Really?
Like, yeah, when you walk in, like six of them say hi. And then as soon as I need to like buy something, they're all busy.
Well, there's an app for that, Tom.
No, there's an app for that. Well, yeah, but you can't buy the big stuff. I do use the app all the time if I just need
pants.
Like a case.
Stop wearing
Get
or start.
Some attention.
Oh, stop wearing.
Yeah.
Stop wearing your pants. That's the problem.
Of course.
Yeah, but if everybody stops wearing pants, then you're not getting any special attention.
That's true.
Yeah, buy pants at an Apple Store.
Cheap mentality. No one's wearing pants anymore in the Apple Store. I don't know. I like the idea of this. I feel like it's a little bit of like this is a cool thing that you can do. I mean, it's a little bit like when the Apple Store app got the ability to basically let you walk in, pick up an item, and walk out with the transaction all sort of happening automatically behind the scenes. It's how many people have really taken advantage of that? I never have, but I like the idea of it. The capability is nice.
All right. What's also nice, or it used to be nice, is getting 23andMe to tell you things about your genome, but there's less they're allowed to tell now.
Yeah, you know, I happen to know I'm an Irish girl, so I enjoy my bourbon, as Ayaz does
as
well.
I'm Irish, you know.
Well,
100% Irish.
Today we are all Irish in a way, so, you know. On that note.
Clink.
Liquid Friday in full effect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm breathing fire right now.
We knew that yesterday. It was cold in here.
Maybe we should do this every day. 23andMe is going to stop
Are you
giving you customers.
This is a genetic disposition somehow.
We all have it, Tom.
Tom, I can't help it. This is just what my people
Please
do.
Don't call out the segue, Tom.
You got to stay warm and you got to stay
hydrated.
Happy. However you can.
My tongue is numb.
Mine too. 23andMe is going to stop giving new customers access to health reports that are tied to their genes. We talked a little bit in the past about how the FDA was saying, listen, you don't have jurisdiction for this stuff. We need to classify what you're actually doing. We have to clear you as a medical device before you can offer diagnosis to customers. Otherwise, you are being irresponsible and you can't have people saying, oh, no, I'm going to get cancer because of what 23andMe sort of connected the dots to. So 23andMe says now it will comply immediately with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's directive to discontinue consumer access to its health-related genetic tests during the ongoing regulatory review process. So if you bought a kit before November 22nd, you're not out of luck. You will still get access to your 250 health reports. It's basically good faith. This is how it used to work. November 22nd is when the FDA sent its warning letter to 23andMe. 23andMe will continue sales of new kits. So it's not as if the company is on pause. New customers, though, will only receive raw genetic data without interpretation, which, as we talked about previously when we talked about this, is that's really the issue. The data itself is not necessarily the problem. It's connecting the dots to say, well, you might actually be more at risk for this certain kind of breast cancer. And then you've got, you know, mass hysteria. So I'm kind of thinking, well, is this just the right thing to do for public safety? Or does it almost lead to more self-diagnosis? Because people are sort of going to be like reading the genetic palm on their own or maybe taking to the internet to try to figure out what 23andMe might have told them. Darren, what do you think? Does this bother you?
No, I mean, I think we should all just be trolling WebMD trying to self-diagnose that cold we have. Or is it leprosy. I mean, we're living in the future. This is so cool. The fact that we're even having this conversation about genetic health testing. We've got drones. We've got single-wheeled motorcycles and augmented glasses. I mean, that's innovation, and it moves at the speed of a bullet, right? And of course, business moves at the speed of, like, herding turtles. But governments and the people with the regulations that can say, like, no more fun, they move at the speed of a stream of molasses. So I'm actually, like, really sad to hear this, because I really wanted to do this Christmas. And I guess now, what am I going to have to do? Go to a third party and give them my genetic data to research? I mean, I felt a little bit better just being with one company. And
well,
so
I think that's an interesting point, right? Because I don't understand why 23andMe feels they have to get rid of all the information. Telling you, like, what haplotype you're in as related to places on the globe is not what the FDA is worried about. If they say, like, hey, you've got a 16th Cherokee according to your gene, that's not what they're worried about. They're worried about the stuff Sarah was mentioning about, you know, risks for cancer and disease, et cetera. And if what happens next is certified HIPAA compliant, you know, health organizations that actually can explain the real risks of this information become the place to go, I think that's a good thing.
But you
actually get some good medical advice. But if it ends up being third parties that are, you know, on the fly or whatever, and then the FDA has to go hunt them down, that's a bad thing.
Or, you know, and I absolutely see, you know, the point of view of the government, like, hey, we don't want to, like, scare people into thinking they have stuff and it has been vetted and all of those things. But, you know, they were really providing something of value. And if maybe the answer could be to, say, open source this kind of stuff, then you've got more eyeballs on it and you can actually, you know, have something that's not them, but you run your genetic code through this, you know, open source Python program off GitHub, and it tells you what you may have, because enough people have, you know, finessed that, and then it's kind of walking the line-ish. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the place where you can make a great website. Whether you're a musician like our own Jason Howell, or you're writing books, or you got a restaurant. Your restaurant doesn't have a good website. I'm not talking about one of those flat websites that just has, like, a blinking GIF and your address and a phone number. No, you want a good-looking, stylized website. And you may say, Tom, that's going to cost me a lot of money. I don't know a good web designer. Well, you don't need one. Go to Squarespace.com. They have hundreds of beautiful templates, 20 new beautiful templates for you to start with. All the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. Squarespace has won numerous design awards. They make even a design dummy like me look good. And they're incredibly easy to use. If you do run into a question, they're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're the folks who were carrying buckets of water up the stairs during Hurricane Sandy last year to keep the data center online. These guys go out of their way to make sure you have a fabulous experience. They take care of the hosting. They do the search engine optimization. Even their code is beautiful. And it starts at just $8 a month. Includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So start a free 2-week trial. No credit card. You don't have to give them any of that stuff. Just start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT12. To get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. They were carrying fuel, not water. I don't know why I said buckets of water. Water would not help run the data center. Buckets of fuel. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. They were putting out that fire. No, there was no fire. They were fueling the data center. Thank you, Squarespace, for your support of Tech News Today. All right, Instagram with their wooden blocks next week. What are we going to hear, Sarah?
It's so weird. I was surprised about this. So an invite went out to journalists, and it wasn't an email, as most of these tech invites are. It was actually sent via FedEx from Instagram for an event happening at 10 a.m. on December 12th, East Coast time, in Midtown Manhattan. So the package was wrapped with brown paper, had a white ribbon around it, contained a wooden block, which is about 4 inches long, wide, and just under 2 inches thick, covered with a printed Instagram shot, and then a slot in the back, which looks like, oh, something that you would hang on your wall. Okay, well, the obvious thing is, oh, Instagram's going to start offering prints, maybe on wooden blocks, or maybe that's just one of the offerings, right? The included note invited the press to share a moment with Kevin Systrom and the Instagram team. Kevin Systrom, of course, is Instagram CEO. Now, back in November, GigaOm had reported You know, they'd heard whispers of possible plans to launch private messaging features within Instagram. Maybe group messaging as well, something that Facebook certainly does. Instagram, of course, is part of Facebook, has a thriving community all on its own. Maybe bake in some of those popular Facebook features to Instagram as well, which I still can't quite figure out how much group messaging I would do around a post of a photo. But again, certainly possible. Now, the whole holidays coming up thing makes the print thing seem like a no-brainer. There are many third-party services. In fact, I have Instagram prints on my wall. Some are on their own. Some are sort of in a grid that I've used to print out Instagram photos that I love. And that's never anything that Instagram, the company, has offered to me. So that seems like, okay, that's something that they could offer. Facebook has experimented with real-world gifts, for example, for, you know, birthdays and that sort of thing in the past. So not out of the realm of possibility. But messaging almost seems more in line with the strategy of Facebook and Instagram as a whole. Darren, what do you think? One or the other? Does more seem more likely?
Well, okay, so the way that I see it is yes, that's cool. You already have a community. Why not add that feature? It's not going to harm anybody that's not using it anyway. But obviously, Instagram, they're huge. They need to, you know, have a business plan for more monetization. We've seen, you know, trials of things like advertising in it, which I'm not a huge fan of. But when you think about it this way, Western Union killed off the Telegram in 2006, right? They FedExed this placard across. So this makes me start thinking like, hey, what if Instagram had a relationship with FedEx to do basically what like Postagram and all of those other, you know, iOS and Android apps that allow you to take a photo and then actually have it like mailed to someone? That would be really compelling. And I hope that's what this is, but maybe that's just me dreaming.
You know, when you put it that way, what I thought was a silly idea starts to sound a little better. You know, it's a quality picture, not just prints. Anybody can do like, hey, order prints of your Instagram, right? But like, it's almost like a framing service in a way. And then it gets brought straight to your door. That could be interesting and so much more interesting than, oh, Instagram's going to have instant messaging. Whether they have that or not, I think is irrelevant. Because I think it's not a bad thing for them to do, but it's not compelling. It doesn't change anyone's mind about Instagram.
Yeah, the messaging service has been rumored around, and that seems like that probably will make its debut on the 12th. Whether they have prints, that seems like that's the domain of other companies. I don't know why Instagram would need to send out this invite unless they're doing this, because I don't. If there is no actual prints and there's just this bizarre 4x2-inch wood block they send out, that just seems really strange. And I don't know if they want to be perceived as that odd. Although they're bought by Facebook, what do they care?
Big Jim in the chat room says, I'm telling you, it's engraving and a partnership with Things Remembered. It's a mall store where they do all the engraving.
It's a deal with Polaroid.
I mean, Instagram is great. I'm a huge fan. I'm on Instagram every day. Don't always post every day. I mean, it's a great service. But there is something too. Hey, get this stuff off an app. Yeah, there's a web presence, but really, it's really the app. And you know, start hanging some stuff on the wall. I take some of my nicest photos on Instagram, and that's the only place it lives. I think that's a great idea.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, Instagram is, it's like instant, right? And then it's out there. And then what happens to it in 10 years? I mean, Sarah, you probably have a fantastic Instagram selfie of you with the Eiffel Tower in Paris. Wouldn't you like that on a nice piece of parchment, on a nice big block?
Yeah, hanging above my bed.
Hanging above your stuff. Yeah.
You know it.
You know, and then, you know, because where is your Instagram photos in 10 years other than on a block of wood above your bed?
That's where it should be.
I think we've figured that out. Now we need to figure out who the real Satoshi Nakamoto is. This has been kicking around on the internet for a while. TechCrunch's John Biggs has an interview with Sky Gray. Sky Gray did some textual analysis. You may have heard about this on posts by Satoshi Nakamoto. Who is Satoshi Nakamoto, you may ask? Well, if you don't know, he is, or maybe a collaboration of people, who founded Bitcoin. It's a pseudonym for the person who founded Bitcoin. Found similarities, Gray did, between one Nick Szabo at George Washington University, that's S-Z-A-B-O, and Satoshi Nakamoto in the way that they wrote. Gray published his results, and you can go through them. He invites people to criticize him. That's one of the reasons he published them. I want people to look at what I did and poke holes in it. That's good science. He said the other reason he did it is that he wants to address the concern that Bitcoin might be created by a bad guy or a government. There's a lot of people suspicious about what Bitcoin really is. He said in the early days, the mystery helped drive enthusiasm, but today it seems to be a negative. So he wants to uncover it for that reason. He takes some heat for that. His textual analysis looked for expressions that were unique to a particular author. He found four expressions that were, you know, below 20% in the writings of most of the kinds of people who do the academic research that would be related to a Bitcoin. And he identified that those four expressions in combination would be used by only one in 1,000 researchers, making it very likely that the fact that he found them used by Szabo makes him, at least in part, Nakamoto. Szabo was searching for technical collaborators on something called the BitGold project, a similar cryptocurrency, a few months before the announcement of Bitcoin. And then the BitGold project went silent. Satoshi never cited Szabo, which Sky Gray says he finds that interesting. Szabo actually had no reaction to Bitcoin at its launch. And Szabo post-dated some of his BitGold stories to look like they came after the announcement of Bitcoin. That's all just, you know, circumstantial evidence. The other things to consider here, Satoshi holds a million Bitcoins. So knowing who has those Bitcoins and who could possibly crash the currency at any point is important. Szabo has denied being Satoshi. In the end, though, Darren, does it matter to you who Satoshi is?
No, I don't think it matters. And I don't think, you know, it really, it, like, what's this idea that, oh, no, Bitcoin could have been started by an evil government and, you know, money could be, like, not within the hands of, like, hackers and stuff. Like,
Adam Weishaupt.
You know, I still believe it's a hacker, right? And I, and this is not the first time that I've heard these kinds of claims. And I think it is, you know, I'm not belittling the awesome research. It is awesome research and it's really cool to put all those clues together. And we love it. But like you said, it doesn't matter. Whoever started Bitcoin is just some filthy rich individual that we can all thank for. If this is not the next thing, at least opening our the you know, enough people's eyes to the concept. So, you know, whoever it is deserves to be filthy rich if it's Szabo or whoever.
Rich in Bitcoins anyway. Sky, if it is Szabo, Nick Szabo, he wasn't rich, but he would be now. And the other thing that Sky Gray does go on to talk about in his original article is that it may have been collaborators that Sky or that Szabo may have written the articles around Bitcoin, but other people may have jumped in to do other parts of it. So it may still be a team. A lot of people think Satoshi Nakamoto has to have been more than one person.
Yeah, I've heard the awesome stories about the three different researchers. There's a whole bunch of great conspiracies about this, and I buy the crypto hacker ones way more than I do like the CIA trying to destroy nation states.
The CIA one's so much more fun, right? You want to, like, some people in the chat room like, it's the NSA, they started this or
but
whatever.
Yeah, they don't need currency to destroy nation states.
Good point right there. But yeah, I don't think in the end it matters who actually created this, because the thing is, it exists and it's surviving. That I say this point like pretty much all the time, might as well be on a soundboard at this point. The fact that people keep using this and it's becoming the focus of banks and countries, and they're actually paying attention to Bitcoin, that's beyond the scope of who originated it. So the fact that it has a life and it continues, that's way more important than who the actual originator is. And even if it does have ties to like some like nefarious means, it's irrelevant because it's taken on a life of its own. If it was tied to the origin of the person, then lots of things would be like they wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, it's not like 90% of all Bitcoin is owned by the Triad or something. Now, if that were the case, it'd be a little weird, right? But as long as no one person has any kind of major control over it, with like back doors and stuff. Uh-oh. Sorry.
Sarah, I know you expressed your love of Bitcoin. I'm particularly curious if you care about the identity of Satoshi or not.
Not at all. Don't care.
Just love the coin.
Well, I mean, I like stories about Bitcoin because it's volatile. The story is always changing. I don't really, I care less about the people who are getting rich or not off of Bitcoin. I don't know. It's more of just like the currency versus commodity is what
fascinates you.
Yeah. Gets me fascinated.
Well, maybe the real identity of Satoshi Nakamoto is a former CNET host who's on to his next project.
I think you've got
Ryan
something.
Seacrest.
Yes, Ryan Seacrest. That is true. He was a CNET host. So there was a story on All Things D, and I have to talk about this. It's keyboards for iPhones And Ryan Seacrest is involved with this. He actually co-founded the company. Get ready for the Typo keyboard. And yes, that's the real name. The company's called Typo. And that keyboard is going to be a physical keyboard that attaches to an iPhone 5 and an iPhone 5S like a case. It just kind of slides on. And why is he involved? There's a press release saying that Seacrest, he was hanging out with friends and everybody had two phones, one for messaging and one for everything else. And they're like, what if we came up with a solution? So this keyboard slips onto the iPhone like a case. It's going to be shown off at CES next year. And this reminded me of a Verge post that Sean Hollister wrote back in November saying, talking about the death of QWERTY keyboards on smartphones. Darren, do you think we're beyond the physical keyboards on these devices? Because Typo plans to make these devices for smartphones and tablets, but it seems like on the phone front, we've moved away from sliders, we've moved away from Blackberries, we've moved away from all of these things.
It might be a little too late. I know that there was a transition period for, you know, the people who had smarter phones, I will call them, like the Blackberries and the Trios, getting into the iPhones and the Androids. And at that time, it was a little bit of a learning curve. And I was a little bit resistant as well as so many others who like hung on to their Motorola Droids. But now there really aren't any good offerings for those keyboard phones. You know, my first thought was actually, can the iPhone even support this? Is it too small? Is it going to be, you know, too cramped of a chiclet keyboard to kind of navigate? Would it be like the Palm Pre? It turns out, I didn't realize this, but the iPhone 5 is only 1.5 millimeters thinner than the BlackBerry Curve, which leads me to believe that it actually has potential if there still are holdouts. The question is, are there enough holdouts like I was maybe 3 years ago that would make enough of a market for this? I feel like there is obviously a subset of those people that will jump on this. But otherwise, I just think this is, you know, fun CES fodder. I mean, every CES needs a Lady Gaga, and this year it's Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Seacrest is this year's CES Lady Gaga. I think you totally nailed that.
Interesting.
I am strangely compelled to try this monstrosity to see how it works, because I've never gotten used to on-screen keyboards, but I can't imagine it's really going to be all that much better.
Anything strange about naming your product that's supposed to make you more efficient typing after something that absolutely spells out the inefficiencies of typing by calling it
typo? But isn't it obvious that the whole point of it is that there's a typo problem that it's solving?
I don't know. I'm not going to typo problem, though. It's an autocorrect problem. And I feel like you're missing out on a huge opportunity.
It's an autocorrect problem, but I mean,
think everything is book.
You blame it on autocorrect because you make typos and then send them to your friends and then they get really confused and wonder.
I think the obvious name should have been typer, but with no E. So typer.
That's a little 2008. Oh no!
Well, so are keyboards on phones,
though. I appreciate the hack. I appreciate the hack that using the human interface device interface on an iPhone. I'm just going to go out there and say, like, any more stuff that allows HIDs is cool in my book.
I don't need a physical keyboard. I don't really have a problem in theory with the on-screen keyboard, but I'm just really bad at it. Sometimes I watch some of my friends, you know, they're typing something on their iPhones. And I'm like, how are you so good at that? And they look at me like, what's wrong with you? It's not that hard. I mean, my autocorrect is out of control. I don't know if it's the way I'm holding it or whatever, but it's almost like it just doesn't work for me. So something like this, if it actually makes me a better texter, I'm in.
I think there's a reason why these things went away.
Amazing. Hosted at Home in the chat room points out Naztec's slide-out keyboard for the iPhone 5. And I don't know if the Aztec has a 5S one yet or not. It's a slide-out keyboard, though, so it doesn't cause any problems, and it already exists. So really, this is just that Ryan Seacrest's name is associated with it.
Yep.
Right?
The fact that he's putting money into it in this day and age. I mean, I remember when the iPhone came out and it had the ability to support Bluetooth keyboards, I was intrigued by that because I wasn't used to the on-screen keyboard. But eventually I got used to it because there was really no other good option because every keyboard was pretty much junk. I just think that in 2014, to introduce some product like this is just bizarre. It
makes a lot of sense, though, because if you're a celebrity and, okay, so if, looking at this Naztec slide-out keyboard for the iPhone, which is on eBay right now for $35, which means that it was made in China for about $5, which means that if they can get a premium name like Ryan Seacrest involved and like, ooh, it's exclusive and awesome, like sell it for $100 and then boom, mega profit, doesn't even matter if you sell that many. And then he got paid for his appearance and they got all the press and then made a bajillion dollars, even though they only pushed like 10,000 units, maybe 100,000.
Maybe if this becomes really popular, people will say, hold on, let me pull my Seacrest out.
I like that.
Type something. I don't. Let's move on to the randomizer. Straw polls still have an issue, so we used Google Forms again today, and I am randomly going to honor the results with 70% of the votes of our live audience. Eagle steals camera, takes selfie. This one's been kicking around for a while. I don't know if the Eagle will be ordering a print of this on Instagram. What do you guys think?
I'm a big fan of the legality of this. Who owns the Eagle shot, since the Eagle took the photo? And it's not owned by anything. There's copyright law. It's like when a chimp took a picture. It was like a conundrum legally. Who owns the copyright? But when an eagle takes a photo, the eagle has rights.
Oh, hey guys,
yeah,
there he is.
Here I am.
Didn't we see this with a hawk recently over by Land's End in San Francisco?
I think that was your regular life. That wasn't internet.
No, it was a video that I watched, and I remember that the whole thing was: is this fake? Is it real? I mean, I love the idea of the eagle selfie.
Maybe that's what Instagram's going to do.
That guy is. He's Instagram's really trying to get the best.
Instagram's going to send a bird with a camera for you. That's
it was a camera set out to take pictures of, I think, a crocodile or something. It was just left on a rock, and the eagle just picked it up and grabbed it and then tried to eat it.
At least the eagle wasn't twerking when it took the video.
Mm. As they are known to do. Mm-hmm.
I just love that anytime you put a camera on an animal, everybody has to stop and be like, that is so cool. Like the BBC that did it with kittens, fantastic. Google it.
But it's an eagle. I mean, what's more all-American than that?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It was eating an apple pie while playing baseball.
True.
Wow.
And then looking
and
at
then
it.
And then the eagle has landed.
The eagle had the freedom to take a selfie, yeah.
Oh, gosh. I mean, God bless us. God bless us all.
This was in Australia, though, just so we know.
Oh. Still, right. Eagle, America.
Oh. You don't email us.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Five Eyes anyway.
Thank our sponsor for today's show, ProXPN, a global virtual private network security system, sort of. You want to keep your traffic away from prying eyes. A VPN is one of the things you need to have in your arsenal. And ProXPN is a great one. I use them. Almost any internet connection you can think of is going to work with this thing. Creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN, including your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes, disguising your physical location, and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter whether you live somewhere where you've got to share an internet connection. Some condo buildings have that, or you're going out to the coffee shop or the airport or the hotel. Complete online privacy. Works with OpenVPN or PPTP. You get to choose. Works on Windows, works on Mac, works on Android, works on iOS. There's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. World-class customer support. Do it. Just do it. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally not that bad. $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. But we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. And we thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Let us, there's nothing on the calendar, so let us check out the emails.
Sure, let's do that.
Incoming message.
Got a message from John in Illinois. It says, AT&T crew, I just wanted to make a somewhat specific case for the use of 23andMe. As an adopted person, I have no medical background to look to. While a person who knows his or her biological family, my parents are the ones who raised me, I have no frame of reference as to whether or not cancer, heart disease, or any number of illnesses run in my family. If 23andMe can provide even a slight look into that window, however they can, I please ask the FDA to get off my lawn. Love the show. Tom, sorry to see you go, and you'll be missed on air.
Thanks, John. In Haynesville. Love Haynesville. I think that the FDA has done you a service here, John, because what you want is a medical opinion, right? And so what you can do is still go to 23andMe and get the genome printout and then take it to a medical professional and get them to give you an actual estimate of what you need to be concerned about and what you don't. 23andMe doesn't do that. They tell you things without context. And when you get told things without context, sometimes you'll misinterpret. And that can be dangerous in a situation like this. So it's a really good critique from John. And I think the scenario works for him better. He's going to get better information under this in this case. I still agree with the principle of getting off the lawn. So thank you, John, for writing in. And thank you, Darren, for being on the show. HAK5.org What's happening over there at Hack 5?
It's good to be on. Let's see. We have 60-watt Wi-Fi point-to-point links going on. We're doing some mesh networking with pineapples. And Shannon has a series on Hack Tip about cats. Netcat. It's like a Swiss Army knife. It's about cats and packets.
But you know what? Nothing wrong with
packet
that.
Cats.
Love that. Yeah. Don't forget about our Best Dev submissions, twit.tv/bestdev for this or any other show. If you have a moment that you loved this year and you want to make sure it gets into the Best Dev, do it now, because we're going to be putting those shows together if we haven't already started. I know Jason's already started. A lot of them started. So let us know. Also, don't forget about our open mic show. You can be on the show with us. We're going to record on Friday, December 13th at 2 p.m. Pacific time for about an hour. So if you're available on that day, by next Wednesday, December 11th, be sure to send us an email, tnt@twit.tv, with the subject line open mic. We'll be picking three people to be on the show with us. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Of course, all of our links and everything you could ever want are at twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back on Monday with Sasha Segan as our guest. See you then.
That was more like
noisy.
Sorry.
Yeah.